And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Our colleague Christine Thomas will be with us in just a few minutes.
The first is a reminder that the phone volunteers have gone home for the fall.
We have.
This was our fall fundraiser, on our fall fundraiser. But we're still going to nudge you to make some contributions this evening, because this fundraiser, we've counted everything that's come in through all of October, and there's still hours left in October.
Yeah, more than four.
So we are going to send you to the web, supportkuaf.com, and you can make your contribution there.
That's right. That's all we're doing.
We did send
the phone volunteers home, yes.
Easy peasy. The growing population of our area has resulted in lots of great new organizations and activities. Organizations and activities that you probably hear about here on KUAF and probably here on Ozarks at Large. Public radio is one of the few electronic media that still broadcasts community announcements. Our local news magazine, Ozarks at Large, shines a very bright light on many area organizations and their activities every day. We also promote fundraising events for local groups, and KUAF listeners respond. I can't tell you how many times, Kyle, you've told me or I've told you that somebody has come up to us and said they had a full house or they had more people, and people that were there said that they were there because they heard about it here on KUAF.
Right. Absolutely.
So maybe you volunteer or work at a local organization that benefits from the exposure provided by KUAF. Or maybe you've discovered a great organization and enjoyed attending fundraising events that you heard about on KUAF. Another great community cause we'd like you to support is public radio. Your support of KUAF this year means we can continue shining that light on other organizations and events in the years to come.
And you can support KUAF in the amount of your choosing by going to supportkuaf.com. We help spread the word about so many things that are happening, from classical music concerts to the work that nonprofits are doing to people who come into town to speak on a university campus. We try to tell you about as many of those things as we can. And that's one of our missions at Ozarks at Large and throughout the day on KUAF through our public service announcements.
So think of your contribution to KUAF as an investment in your community. You're investing not only in something that will continue to educate and entertain you, but your neighbors and the other people that live in this community. And by perhaps better educating people, we can create a better community.
That's what I think we all want.
I think so.
And you can help us do that. Thanks for your continued support. There is still time during this on-air fundraiser to support us online. The web address is easy to remember.
It's supportkuaf.com.
And from all of us at Ozarks at Large and KUAF and your fellow listener contributors,
thank you.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. 11, the restaurant at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, serves modern American comfort food with an Ozarks twist. Wednesday and Friday evenings offer Culture Hour from 5 to 7 with drinks, live music, and dinner until 9 p.m., featuring a monthly chef's menu. Dinner reservations are suggested. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org.
The field vying for the Republican nomination to fill Tim Griffin's Arkansas 2nd Congressional District seat widened this week, with State Representative Ann Clemmer officially entering the race. Clemmer of Benton says she is a candidate willing to fight through vetoes, as she did in the legislative session to help pass a voter ID law in Arkansas and greater restrictions on abortion. However, Clemmer took a different tone when she was asked about the recent government shutdown.
I would probably want to be on the side of advising my colleagues not to start a fight they don't see in a victorious end to. I think I shared with my class that I remember the prior government shutdown, and I didn't think it ended all that well, and I was not extremely supportive of the shutdown, to say the least.
Clemmer's entry into the 2nd District Republican race follows announcements this week by Little Rock banker French Hill and retired Colonel Conrad Reynolds.
The number of cases of whooping cough in Arkansas has more than doubled from a year ago. Dr. Gary Wheeler with the Arkansas Department of Health says at this time last year, there were 141 reported cases. And so far this year, there are 342.
This is not a unique pattern to Arkansas. We're seeing this across the country. And the patterns of increase are occurring in different regions at different times. But we have clearly seen a huge upswing in the number of cases in children in elementary school and adolescents.
Dr. Wheeler says there is a lot of speculation as to why whooping cough, also known as pertussis, is on the rise. He says the pertussis vaccine was changed a few years ago, and it could be that its protection may not be as long-lasting as was originally thought.
The United Way of Northwest Arkansas yesterday announced its receipts of annual emergency food and shelter appropriations from the federal government. The money is appropriated at the federal level by a national board chaired by the Emergency Food and Shelter Board Program and is distributed to local boards to help expand socioeconomic emergency food and shelter programs rather than disaster-related programs. In the appropriation, Benton County will receive just more than $64,800. Carroll County will receive almost $7,700. Madison County, $4,100, and programs in Washington County will receive almost $5,900. Recipients of the funds will be determined by the local board, which will include organizations like the United Way, Salvation Army, and other charitable organizations. To apply for the funds, organizations must be private, voluntary nonprofits or governmental units, have an accounting system, practice non-discrimination, and have a proven track record of delivering emergency food or shelter programs. Deadline to apply is November 5th. For more information, you can contact the United Way at 750-1221.
Walking and biking trails in Fort Smith got a boost yesterday from the Walton Family Foundation. The group gave a $1 million matching grant to the city of Fort Smith, allowing for construction of a two-mile stretch of the River West Trail extending from River Park to the Rice Cardin Levee Trail. We'll have more ahead on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
And mostly clear tonight, not bad for trick-or-treating. Lows will be in the upper 30s in northwest Arkansas, mid-40s for the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny tomorrow, the quintessential autumn day, highs from 67 to 72. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, lows from 37 to 42. This is Ozarks at Large. There are options when choosing the way to mark the end of a life, from conventional funeral services to a wake to cremation. In more places than ever before in the United States, there is another option, the green funeral, one that's environmentally friendly. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, there is an effort locally to bring that option to northwest Arkansas.
We're on a four-wheeler 12 miles southwest of Fayetteville with Vicki Kelly. She's lived out here on the land for 2 decades. She's driving us through the forest on an old trace up the mountain to Droke House.
The 40 acres here is landlocked.
And Vicki Kelly seeks to unlock this estate and transform it into an alternative green burial grounds. Finally arrive at Droke House, a sprawling faux Fay-Jones structure built out of wood and stone.
On the top of this house, at the, I guess this would be the east end, is a dome which actually opens across the top and rotates to track the stars.
James Droke was the grandson of University of Arkansas Dean George Wesley Droke, an early 20th century professor of math, logic, and astronomy. He died in the autumn of 1936. James Droke and his wife Kay resided in Arlington, Texas, but vacationed here on this mountaintop estate they named Windcrest, constructed in the mid-20th century. An amateur astronomer, he later built an observatory for use by University of Arkansas research scientists on the north wing of his home, complete with a 16-inch reflecting telescope. The Drokes were childless and willed their estate and observatory to the University of Arkansas Foundation in 1976, transferable upon their death. That occurred 5 years ago, but the house has stood empty for more than 20 years. We climb up into the observatory's equatorial room, the telescope long gone, the dome still intact.
The observatory is only accessible from the exterior of the building. But nothing feels more womb-like than a circular embrace.
Vicki Kelly envisions families in mourning gathering here, looking up to the heavens after laying their loved ones to rest in the earth just down the mountain. We wander through the empty 1960s-era house, walking on original vintage orange floral carpeting, past the kitchen's burnt orange enameled appliances, into the great room. It has a dome ceiling, an immense stone fireplace, surrounded by 40 acres of forest.
So many people have shifted in the past generation, and I was one among them. When I lost my son, he was cremated. It was considered sacrilegious by some in my family, but I was very clear that that was a wiser use of green space than traditional burial as we had known it.
The typical casket and hermetically sealed concrete vault surrounding it can take up to as much as 50 cubic feet. So cremation seemed a better option to Kelly until she discovered natural burial.
If you rolled back the sod of a traditional cemetery, you've got a parking lot of vaults over caskets. And it took us a while to get from that model to let's do cremation, wiser use of green space. This is yet the next step.
Vicki Kelly has been an environmental advocate and festival organizer for the past 25 years, but now she's devoting the rest of her life to home death care. And if she manages to get this green cemetery off the ground, the deceased would be prepared by a professional mortician off-premises without embalming fluid, formaldehyde is toxic to the environment, then transported here for final viewing and interment.
This is what we who are desiring to be informed and enlightened and environmentally conscious need to hear, need to give some thought to, need to get our heads around, and move to the natural burial movement.
The former Druk residence and grounds are a perfect sacred space, she says, for natural burial. We walk outside, the sun low on the western horizon, where Kelly points to the future cemetery grounds.
The unique thing about a natural burial is most people assume that, you know, you've heard the term 6 feet under. Well, in natural burial, it's only about 3 foot deep because you want the body to decompose. You want the worms to find you. Now, what's interesting also about a natural cemetery is there are no grave markers. All of the records are kept by GPS points. So you could actually be in China and zero in by satellite and meditate beside grandma's grave because you're going to find it through the GPS systems.
Of course, every green cemetery has its own set of practices, and some do allow grave markers made out of natural local stone. This project, with limited financial resources, Vicki Kelly's looking for both financial investors and donors to purchase the property and plan the cemetery as a nonprofit. The board would hire a manager, gravedigger, groundskeeper, as well as sales and administrative staff. Income would derive from cemetery plot sales as well as special events hosted on the grounds. Her role, Vicki Kelly said, would be a spokesperson, educator, and good neighbor. The Druk estate is currently for sale by the University of Arkansas Foundation, listed as commercial real estate. Vicki Kelly's met with county zoning officials as well as the fire marshal and has been providing tours to interested prospects.
If we're going for the certifications that are awarded by the Green Cemetery Council, we do have to follow certain criteria. And that council says there can be no non-native plants introduced to the landscape. We do not bury in rows. You know, you fit bodies between tree roots and various techniques that make it the least invasive for the natural setting as possible. My actual deep, true heart says, I want to own a couple of mules that pull those bodies in on a wagon. I don't see why we would have to have a hearse do a job in the woods that my team of mules could do, and even working that into the business plan and see if that'll fly, but it's part of my vision.
This would be the first nonprofit green cemetery project of its kind in Arkansas. The first natural burial ground in the U.S. opened in 1998 in South Carolina. Today, 37 have been certified in 23 states, including Missouri. Bowser Family Funeral Home in Mena is the only provider in Arkansas with Green Burial Council certification. In a phone conversation with owner Brian Bowser, he said all funeral homes have historically offered direct burial, no embalming in a decomposing casket. And while certain cemeteries require a concrete vault, no state law mandates it. As for Vicki Kelly, she's joined the National Home Funeral Alliance and is training to become a home funeral consultant, assisting families with staging after-death rituals, filing necessary paperwork, and legally transporting their deceased for natural burial. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information about the Droke Property Green Cemetery Project, you can go online to arkansasnaturalcemetery.org. In just a few minutes on this evening edition of Ozarks at Large, Christina will talk with Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers about things you can still do for Halloween, plus a $1 million boost to trails in Fort Smith, and a conversation with Frank Tavares, the man who has been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements for the past couple of decades. That's all ahead on this evening edition of Ozarks at Large. This is still the KUAF on-air fundraiser. We have sent phone volunteers home. It's just us here at Ozarks at Large here now, but you can still support us by going to the website supportkuaf.com. Funding for public radio has become much tighter over the past couple of years. NPR has announced another cut in staffing in just the past few weeks. They have a hiring freeze, and they're planning on cutting 10% of their staff in the next year. Federal funding for public radio stations like KUAF has also been cut. The sequestration last year cost us about $10,000. More cuts this year. In addition to that, a funding program that was for stations located in rural areas has been cut. That will cost KUAF about $25,000 this year. Two years ago, KUAF received over $200,000 in federal money from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Last year, that amount was down to $185,000. This year, it's expected to be $150,000. Local funding from the University of Arkansas has remained about the same the past few years, and local business support is very good for us, but it's also stayed the same for the past 2 years. Those are reasons we're asking you for your individual donation tonight in the last few hours of this on-air fundraiser. Listeners like you provide the largest and the most stable form of funding for public radio stations like KUAF. And at KUAF, we need more listeners, more people using the service at KUAF to donate to KUAF. If it's been a while since you've made a gift to KUAF, or if you've never contributed, we need your help. You can do so online, supportkuaf.com. And if you do give every year, you might consider bumping your donation up a bit as well. Again, you can support us online at a very safe, easy, quick place to make your contribution, supportkuaf.com. And from all of us, thank you very much.
It is Halloween, Thursday, October 31st, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me inside Studio 123, Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I should have said boo sometime during that. That's all I got. Boo. Bye. Now, here's something fun you might want to do tonight. It's a family that decorates their house for Halloween and invites everybody to come there.
So a haunted house?
Yes.
Okay. Is this a party?
Yes.
Okay.
Jonna Bryant and her husband, Chris, call it Banshee Manor. It's in Fayetteville. And the fun part is that early this evening, it's kid-friendly. And then as it gets later, it gets scarier. And they started all this because they won a pinhead mask in a radio contest.
Okay.
And it got out of
hand.
And
it just sounds like it's grown.
The fun part of this is if you wish to donate, donations go to the Boxer Rescue Organization of Northwest Arkansas.
Boxer Lovers?
That would be Boxer Lovers, not people who box the dogs.
Okay.
And Northwest Arkansas Share, which is a support group for those who have suffered the loss of an infant. This is from 5 to 10 o'clock tonight and is located at 2893 North Sunny Lane in Fayetteville. Go have a good time and give some money to a good cause. And tell John I said howdy.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. Back to you, Kyle.
Thanks, Christina. Yesterday, officials with the city of Fort Smith announced a treat, a $1 million grant to help construct a two-mile stretch of trail along the city's riverfront. This grant comes from the Walton Family Foundation, and the 2 miles will help connect an important part of a draft that is the Fort Smith Trails and Greenway Master Plan. Mike Alsup is the director of Fort Smith's Parks and Recreation Department. He says the construction on the new trail should begin within 6 months and be completed by the middle of 2015.
You know, it's a part of our Trails and Greenways Master Plan is shows a projected number of trails for about 88 miles. You could almost circle the entire city if the whole trail system were built, and this was one of our top-rated trails when we first did the plan, and so we're glad to be back where we can fund trail development and look forward to working with the Walton family and getting that first section of trail along the river started and going.
The city is matching the $1 million grant from the Walton Family Foundation with another $1 million. The overall ambitious trail plans for the future of Fort Smith include more than 80 miles of interconnected trails that will ring the city. Mike Alsup says a seven-figure grant like the one announced yesterday can go a long way to helping a proposed system become reality.
It can, yes. And trail work, it's been a while since we built a trail, but we usually had just, as we were planning, a budget of about $300,000 per mile, and that was 6 or 7 years ago. So the cost to build a trail has gone up, and then this trail will be, I expect a high volume on this trail, so we'll probably build it wider than what we had planned for most of our trails. And this one will probably be concrete because of its location near the river to give it more stability over the long term.
Yeah.
But we plan on lighting it and probably doing some landscaping in places. And it'll be a very nice version of the trails that we plan to build.
It's a two-mile section that goes from the River West Trail from River Park to the Rice Carden Levee Trail. For those of us who are not as familiar with the riverfront in Fort Smith, where is that? Tell me a little bit about that two-mile section.
Yeah, the River Park is in downtown Fort Smith, right at the Garrison Street Bridge that takes you over into Oklahoma, across the street. Matter of fact, we share a property line with the National Historic Site with Judge Parker's Courthouse and the First Fort and all of that. And so the trail will leave River Park right there next to the bridge, and it'll go north to the Rice Carden Levee Trail. We have a levee that protects that. It's agriculture land right now, but hopefully that'll all be developed into the future into some other uses. But so it follows Riverfront Drive. Used to be called Clayton Expressway, and it follows the river for 2 miles. And then the Rice Carden Levee Trail is 3 miles, and it's a part of the trail from River Park to Fort Smith Park. The proposed trail is all called the River West Trail, and the Rice Carden is a part of that River West Trail.
With the Arkansas River down there and with the historic site and with historic Garrison Avenue, there's a natural sort of launching for trails and pedestrians, isn't there?
Yes, there is, and quite a bit of pedestrian traffic already in the downtown area. The Marshall's Museum has announced, I believe it's either in 2014 or 15, that they're planning a groundbreaking. So with the construction of that, I believe you'll see a lot of development start happening along the river.
I know that in Northwest Arkansas over the past few years, as trails have been built, it seems to be sort of a contagious thing. And, of course, there was help from the Walton Family Foundation for the Razorback Greenway as well. It seems like once you start building trails and once you start being able to connect them, they continue to grow. People find out that it's a good idea.
They do. People are very interested in being outside, and especially if you have a really attractive location like along the river or something like that. So we've got the perfect location for this part of the trail, and it is contagious. Here in Fort Smith, the Chaffee redevelopment area is very popular with joggers and walkers and cyclists. The traffic isn't too bad, and it's a pretty good place to go. And then several trails have been built out there, too, so it's a very popular area, and this will become that way as well. It's a good day here.
Excellent. Mike, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling.
All right. Mike Alsup is the Fort Smith Parks and Recreation Director. He talked to me yesterday after the announcement of a $1 million grant from the Walton Family Foundation to help fund a new 2-mile stretch of trails along the Arkansas River near downtown Fort Smith. This is Ozarks at Large. In just a couple of minutes on this evening edition of Ozarks at Large, Frank Tavares, who has been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements for more than the last 20 years, in conversation. That's just ahead. It's Halloween.
It is Halloween. Trick or treat.
That's right. You know what? I did not get to trick or treat as a child.
You didn't.
I grew up in a very small town in rural Arkansas. And when we moved there, we were about the only house on this dirt road. So there was a school carnival. But I never got the experience of going door to door and tricking or
well,
treating.
That's unfortunate. I actually live too far out of the city. Fayetteville has since grown, but I live too far out that we had to come into town and, you know, trick or treat in my cousin's neighborhood or a friend's neighborhood.
So we both kind of know what it's like not to have something that other people experience.
Right.
Public radio, KUAF, is always here for you. You don't have to go into town.
You don't.
You can, if you are the only house on a dirt road, you can still get us.
Right, because of our fabulous 1,000-watt.
Right.
100,000-watt.
That's right. That's right. So we hope that we give you treats throughout the broadcast day. And there's no trick involved.
There is no trick involved. We do ask, however, for your support. That I guess that is the trick, the catch. I don't know if it's a catch, really, but we do ask for your support. We are in the final hours of our fall on-air fundraiser. At the end of Halloween, midnight tonight, midnight October 31st, the fundraiser is over. So you have a few hours left to contribute to KUAF. You can go to our website, supportkuaf.com.
That's right. The phone volunteers are gone. They're presumably out getting some candy corn door to door right now.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. And if you have a moment right now and you're near a computer, you can support us at supportkuaf.com. The contribution that you make is put with contributions from thousands of other listeners that keeps programs like Performance Today and Morning Edition and Fresh Air and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the air. We pay for them with your contributions.
And you know what? If you do go to supportkuaf.com, I'd like to know what you're dressed up as. If you're in a costume or if your kids are in a costume.
Yeah.
While you're making your contribution, just kind of, you know, let us know.
So we can live vicariously through you as you trick-or-treat tonight.
Right. Because we're not trick-or-treating.
That's right. Supportkuaf.com, and thank you. This is Ozarks at Large. You may not know the name Frank Tavares, but you'll recognize his voice.
This is NPR.
For decades, he's been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements. He's leaving that job next year, but don't worry, he won't be bored. He's a professor of communications at Southern Connecticut University. He's finishing his first novel, and he's still talking about his first collection of short stories, just published, entitled The Man Who Built Boxes. I recently reached Frank at his home, and I asked him about his passion for writing.
I'm an early morning guy. My wife is too, but sometimes I'm a little earlier than she. And that's the time when I would be alone. So I could get up early, fix myself a cup of tea, a piece of toast, and then sit down in front of the laptop. And if I had some mornings, I might have as much as an hour. Other mornings, maybe 30 minutes, even less. But the idea was to do it. It was as simple as that. And I don't manage every single day, but more often than not. And so that's worked for years. But you know something, Kyle? Your work habits change. I think back when I was in grad school, my most productive period didn't start till about 10 at night. I couldn't do that now. So you have to pay attention to when is it going to work best for you? When's your most productive time?
The characters in many of the short stories in The Man Who Built Boxes seem to be people, and this is a compliment, seem to be people we know. It's just that we don't know as much about them as we do after we've read your pages. Does that make sense?
Well, this is, thank you for saying that, because that's one of the things that I hope for here. I want to attract readers who are curious about others. I guess it's as simple as that. And so maybe they might see something that resonates with them, a little flash of their own personality or people that they know. And hearing you ask that question, it's like, well, okay, it worked with one person. Maybe it'll work with somebody else. But that's really something that I'm concerned about. I want people to be able to recognize them and to want to know a little bit more about them, just as I'm hoping that the same thing will happen with the characters. Some of these characters are more curious about where they are in their life at a particular time. And some of the other characters, yeah, they don't care. This is what I'm dealing with now, and okay, what's next? So, yes, thank you for asking that.
Where do the ideas come from? Because each of these stories is different.
It's, yes, that's something that I often wonder about myself. And sometimes it'll come from a snatch of conversation that I hear. And I'll be on the train, and I'll hear just a piece of conversation, people walking past me, and I'll make a little note of that sentence. Or sometimes I carry a little portable audio recorder, or I can use my smartphone, and I'll very surreptitiously repeat what I've just heard. Or other times, I've had a couple of the stories in the book started with the title first. And I found the title was very interesting, and I wanted to know a little bit more about it. One of the stories, there's one story called Accident with a View, for instance. And the first paragraph or so of that story is something that actually I experienced up to a point. The ending of that paragraph or those first couple of paragraphs is a little different. I was sitting at an intersection in my car. I drive an SUV, so I'm up a little bit. And the car in front of me at the light, waiting for it to turn green, is a regular sedan, so it's a little lower. And to our left, there's this truck. And I know the truck is blocking the sight lines of the person in the sedan in front of me. And I see out of the corner of my eye, and I turn and I look, and here's some fellow in a hurry, does something really dumb. Just as the light is changing to green, he dashes across the street to make it before the traffic starts. And I see what's going to happen. I see that the driver in front of me can't see him because of the truck, but their timing is going to be just right on the mark, and just as he gets in front of the car is going to take off. And I had this visceral reaction to it. I my first instinct was to lean on the horn, and then I thought, no, bad idea, because that'll just make this guy pull out a little quicker. And I actually yelled into the windshield, no. Now, it ended okay. The guy saw the car starting to pull out. He stopped. Everybody looked at him like he was an idiot, which he was. And it went on, and life was the same. So I said to myself as I'm driving away, literally shaking from watching this, well, I know how this story started. What if it just ended a little differently? Well, let's go find out. And so that's how that particular story began. And other times, like I say, it's a little snatch of dialogue or something else that I've observed. The story that takes place, Antonio's Yard, that starts in this little village in Italy. Last summer, I had a chance to travel to this one city in Italy. It's called the Dying City. I can't remember the Italian name for it. And it's built on this plateau, which is made of not very stable volcanic rock. The city's medieval, so it's hundreds of years old. And literally parts of this plateau have been crumbling away. And so you're walking through the little streets of this town, and here's this beautiful facade of some 300-year-old building, and then you realize there's nothing on the other side of it. There's just this drop. So I thought of this fellow who lives there, and he wakes up one morning, and part of his backyard is going. And it's not a new thing. And so that's how that story started. So sometimes I'll write that beginning scene. I don't know where it's going. I'll put it aside, and later I'll come back to it.
You mentioned that sometimes the title comes first. I'm going to take a shot at one that maybe had the title before the rest. And it's the first one in the book, My First Ex-Wife's Third Wedding.
Very nicely done.
Yeah.
You're almost correct. The title came almost instantly after I heard that line. And the first line of that story, let me see if I can find it. The first line of the story is, "You know," my first ex-wife said, "it never occurred to me that I'd be married three times." And I had heard that line spoken, and I'm thinking, that's really interesting. And then the title came very, very quickly after that. And I just said, I love this title. I really like this title, My First Ex-Wife's Third Wedding. I mean, I'm not sure what it means, but it has a nice feel to it. And so you're almost right. You're 75% of the way there.
When you hear someone say something like that,
yes,
do you allow yourself to actually make a physical note, or do you just have to store it away and hope you remember it?
If I can, I will make a physical note because, you know, good ideas, what's the old expression? Good ideas like pencils get lost. And sometimes I'll mentally store it away, and the first moment I can, I'll just reach for a piece of paper and write it down. Because many times I at the end of the day or midway through the day, I said, oh, what was that I heard Kyle say this morning? Oh, we were talking on the phone, and I really loved that. Oh, I wish I had written it down. And maybe it'll come back later, and maybe it won't. But I got to tell you, you know, after you hit 30, sometimes it doesn't come back.
The name of the book is The Man Who Built Boxes and Other Stories. Frank, can I ask you just three quick, perhaps silly questions?
Well, you know, being a college professor, you know what I'm going to say. There are no silly questions.
Well, let's see.
And so when people log on to Amazon.com and look for The Man Who Built Boxes, and I want them to remember that there are no silly questions when you look at the author bio or the description of the book. If there are questions, they're legitimate questions, and I am willing to answer them.
Okay.
How'd I do? Was that okay? Was that convincing?
Yes, it was.
Well, I meant it.
Well, here is silly question number one.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone up to a counter and asked someone if they sold forever stamps?
You caught me in the middle of drinking water. That was very dangerous. But no, and I'm going to now.
I don't. You got to be careful because that could really mess with somebody, though.
Oh, yes. But I've had people who know me, some of my colleagues at the university, will come by me. I've had this happen to me, I think, on three different occasions. Now, you know they're NPR listeners because somebody will come up to me. I had somebody do this in a meeting with our new dean, as a matter of fact. We're all there, and the meeting hasn't started. And somebody just leaned over to me, behind me, so I didn't see who it was. And they did the line. You know? Mentioned one of the pharmacies sells forever stamps at the checkout counter. And I'm thinking, they're listening.
All right.
Nicely silly. Done, Kyle.
Thank you. Silly question number two.
Yeah.
Have people recognized you because of the Capital Cities song that might not have heard you on NPR?
Not yet, but I'm waiting for it. And now we're going to have to tell people. Now we're going to have to tell people about the Capital Cities song.
How did that come about?
The fellows in the group, Capital Cities is a Los Angeles music group, and I got an email from one of them back in the very early spring, or it might have been from their agent, who said basically that they're working on this particular piece and they're trying this little funny idea, and they wonder if I might be open to voicing a couple of pieces of it for them. Well, you're always suspicious when somebody approaches you because, I mean, if somebody tracks me down and asks me if I'd be willing to work on something, I'm very careful about it. There's nothing in my contract with NPR about the work I do with NPR, for instance, that prohibits me from doing other voice work. But because I've been involved with NPR, both part-time and full-time, I was a department head there for a decade, executive producer. I was host of several non-news shows during my tenure there. I'm one of these real passionate public radio fans, and I'm going to be very careful about doing anything that might reflect negatively on my association with NPR and on public radio. So, you know, I'm very leery at first, and they said, well, let us send you a clip of this, and then they voiced some of it. One of the guys in the band voiced what they wanted me to do using different words, and then they pulled a clip of me doing a funding credit someplace and put it in so I could hear how it went against the music. So long story short, I thought, you know, this is going to be fun. And it reminded me, do you remember the Meatloaf song from years ago, Paradise by the Dashboard Light?
With Phil Rizzuto doing the play-by-play.
With Phil Rizzuto doing that little cameo where he does the play-by-play as the characters in the song are basically making out in the front seat of this car. And it put me in mind of that. Well, here's this, one of the artists on this particular CD clip. Did you ever think, Kyle, that you might hear in the same sentence, the names NPR's Frank Tavares and hip-hop artist Andre 3000 together? I mean, that's just...
Support for Capital Cities comes from Lazy Hooks. National Public Radio.
Silly question number three. Have you ever visited the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation?
I'm really enjoying your silly questions, Kyle. This is really cool. No, I haven't, but I remember when we used to have quite a few credits from Ted and Jennifer Stanley years ago, and then Jennifer Stanley was on the board of directors for NPR for a while, and I was still there when she was on the board. We overlapped, I think, from my full-time association with them, and I did have a chance to meet her a few times, and I remember telling her that aside from her, I was the one that said her name out loud more than anybody else.
Well, Frank, thanks so much. The name of the book of the short stories, The Man Who Built Boxes and Other Stories, it's out now. You can find it online as well as in bookstores. And then the novel that you're working on, which excerpt, Digging Up Mr. Bradley, any idea when that might come out?
I'm hoping it'll be sometime within a year. I'm hoping that that also will be available at Amazon.com. So pretty soon when you put my name in at Amazon, aside from some of the NPR things that come up and The Man That Built Boxes, there'll be the novel there too. Kyle, it's been a pleasure to be with you, and thank you for letting me share some of your time with your listeners. That's an honor.
We'll chat again when the novel comes out. How's that?
Excellent.
Frank Tavares has been the voice of NPR's underwriting announcements for the past two decades, and his new collection of short stories is titled The Man Who Built Boxes. You can find it at Amazon.com and other sites. I talked to him from his home in Connecticut. This is Ozarks at Large. Happy Halloween. This is Ozarks at Large. With me is Katie Hendrickson, who is the host of Note, who is Monday through Friday, normal weeks at 11 o'clock, fundraising week. It comes on an hour early. Also Sunday Symphony every Sunday night at 7. And also one of the architects behind the KUAF blog, which is called The Mixdown. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kyle.
Don't take it personally that the first time you've been on the show again for a while is Halloween. That's purely coincidence.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I know I'm really frightening, but...
I want to talk to you about a band that's playing at Chelsea's Corner club in Eureka Springs tonight for Halloween. That's Fossils of Ancient Robots.
Yeah, they're Eureka Springs band, and they're electronica. And earlier this summer, you and I had a chance to go to Smoke and Barrel Tavern and hear them play some songs.
Actually, I wasn't there.
Oh, that was when you were in Iceland.
Okay,
you missed that one.
I did, yes.
But yes, they're an electronica band out of Eureka Springs, and they have influences ranging from Depeche Mode to Joy Division to more modern. All those bands are modern.
Right.
Rock and roll is modern, but more contemporary sounds, not the 80s sounds that you think of or 90s sounds when you think of Depeche Mode, but lots of keyboards. I think it's been a while since I saw them on stage, but they had at least 3 keyboards on stage, and then they have a computer set up and all sorts of things. But they're out of Eureka Springs, and they have a show tonight at Chelsea's Corner in Eureka Springs. A very fun band to see on Halloween.
And you mentioned that you saw them at Smoke and Barrel, and that's part of a new series that we've launched in the last few months.
Yeah, it's a really exciting collaboration with Smoke and Barrel Tavern. We're going down to the bar where the bands that play that night will set up early, and they will play a short set for us. We'll get a sound from that, and as well as video. We're shooting some video for it. And then we have a little interview and talk to the band. It's a really fun new collaboration.
And you can find out more about those and hear and see some of those performances at the KUAF blog, The Mixdown.
Yes, it's KUAF.com/mixdown, and we launched that this summer, and it's an attempt to maybe put all the odds and ends of KUAF, and also, you know, videos. Those are, obviously, you can't watch videos when you're listening to the radio. Well, you can watch them while you're listening to the radio, but
right.
You can't see them by listening to the radio. So it's a way for us to display those videos and have more sorts of odds and ends. I know we also had Jacqueline Froelich had a story on edamame that was on NPR recently, mm-hmm. and so she gave a reporter's notebook a little file to kind of give a background of how she approached that story. So insider things that you can't get by just listening to the story when it airs on Ozarks at Large.
And where can you find that again?
KUAF.com/mixdown. Another great thing that we have there are our album advances.
Right.
Which is, everyone knows about NPR doing first listens. It's been a very, very popular feature. Well, we do that for local bands. So we've done it for Three Penny Acre. We just did that for Don't Stop, Please. Mm-hmm. We play all sorts of the Trash Can Bandits.
Phones.
All sorts of bands. We give you a chance to hear the album before you can go purchase the actual, in some cases, vinyl. Sometimes it's a CD. Sometimes it's a digital download.
Sometimes it's just go see them live.
Go see them live.
Because it'll be in advance of the CD release party.
Right.
And you know, sometimes when you go see the brand new release party and they're playing the new songs, you haven't heard it before, but now you've got a chance to hear them and be a little bit familiar when you see them on stage around Northwest Arkansas. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Coming up in November in Northwest Arkansas, survival skills, fearless riding, and ugly sweaters. All teen Hunger Games fans are invited to join the Bentonville Public Library as they host a survival training day for future tributes. If you've read the books or seen the movies Hunger Games, you know what we're talking about here. Teens who attend will learn survival skills from local experts, from knot tying skills to identifying local plants. The event takes place inside the library as well as across the street at Train Station Park. Any teens interested in attending the workshop are encouraged to sign up for the event, which will be held Saturday, November 9th at 1 o'clock. The program is for teenagers 13 to 18 years of age. Registration is required at bentonvillelibrary.org. Author Crescent Dragonwagon, who lived in Eureka Springs for more than 30 years, will be at the Fayetteville Public Library for 2 days next week, November 5th and 6th, conducting writing workshops and presenting an author talk. All of her events at the Fayetteville Public Library, free and open to the public. She'll be conducting writing workshops for youth and teens at Fayetteville Public Library Tuesday and Wednesday in the Walmart Storytime Room. Those workshops are free. Registration is required. The Tuesday workshop is 4 to 5:30 in the afternoon. Wednesday evening, the workshop is 4 until 5. And on Wednesday evening from 6 until 7:30, Crescent will be speaking at the Fayetteville Public Library to promote Fearless in the Ozarks, a fourth annual event in Eureka Springs that takes place later this month. For more information, you can go to faylib.org. And try to find your ugliest sweater so you can help local children's charities by participating in the first ever annual Ugly Christmas Sweater Run. It's during the 10th annual J.B. Hunt Children's Christmas Train event, December 7th, that's a Saturday, at the Arkansas and Missouri Railroad Train Depot in downtown Springdale at 1 that afternoon. Wear your ugliest Christmas sweater and you might win a prize. Starting Lines will have all sorts of fun going on. It's a 5K race. It's not chip time, but awards will be given for the top three male and female race finishers. If you'd like to know more, you can go to registerwizard.com.
A young black customer is stopped at an upscale store. Protest spreads, and then the controversy snares, of all people, Jay-Z.
Suddenly, Jay-Z is the face of this controversy. This black rapper is suddenly the face of racial profiling in these two incidents, and not, you know, the NYPD or Barney's.
I'm Steve Inskeep. Rappers and retailers in an awkward embrace on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Morning edition tomorrow morning from 5 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is the end of the on-air fundraiser for KUAF right now.
This is the last pitch, as we call them, that you will hear on air until our next fundraiser.
That's right. Now, we have until midnight tonight to count your contribution toward the overall monthly fundraiser.
Right. We've been counting all pledges, all donations, all contributions made in the month of October toward our fall goal. And technically, October's not over until midnight tonight.
Mm-hmm. There's still time to go to supportkuaf.com and make your contribution there. No contribution too small and certainly no contribution too big.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think there's a too big contribution,
nope.
But try us. And the reason we come to you is because you are our most stable and our largest
reliable source of income.
Thank you very much. We do appreciate it, and we use it to pay for the programs like Performance Today and Morning Edition. So thank you very much from all of us at Ozarks at Large and KUAF.
Yes, right. Thanks.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Brashears. Before we go, we have to say a goodbye.
Right, and probably another thank you, too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Our membership director, Molly Ron, is leaving us to go on to pursue other endeavors. And today, Halloween, was her last day.
Now, fortunately, she's staying in Northwest Arkansas,
yes.
So she's not going far, far away. But we're all very excited for her and just wanted to take a moment and thank her for all of the hard work she has done while here at KUAF.
If in the last 3 years you've been part of a KUAF event that took place in or outside of our doors, it probably ran smoothly because of Molly.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it was an ice cream social that we participated in, whether it was when we were on the square at Bentonville meeting you, whether it was these on-air fundraisers, it was because of Molly that it ran as well as it did.
Right. She is fabulous at organizing and executing these sort of events and things like the on-air fundraisers.
Which means that in a couple of years, the Amazium is probably going to be amazing, right?
<That's> I think that's
heading.
The goal.
Yeah. So, Molly, thank you from all of us, and get some rest. It's been a long fundraiser, her last one here, but we appreciate all of her help. All right. So, and you know what? Because she's leaving, what would she want us to say in her last hours on the payroll at KUAF?
That you should support your public radio station.
That's right.
It is important to have contributing listeners like yourselves continuing to support your local public radio station so it can continue to bring you news from around the world and right here in your own backyard.
And she would also want you to go to supportkuaf.com to do so.
Another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon. Antoinette and I will be here. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening and thanks for your support.
Happy Halloween.